Welcome to the Rich Room Podcast.
I'm your host, Lindsay Sobel.
Where you can master the art of enriching your life.
What kind of kindergarten shit is this?
And finding a path to financial freedom.
Who the fuck was supposed to teach me how to do my taxes?
So sit back, relax, and step into the Rich Room. You know I can't help but these, cause they know they can never touch these. So baby, let me talk my shit, or I might just throw another fit.
Welcome to the Rich Room Podcast, everyone. I'm your host, Lindsay Sobel. I got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking the Valley, talking about sad men, and we might get into a little politics. We might. I'm not quite sure. We'll just see how the episode develops. But first, let's talk about hurricane season. So there is a drought in Florida right now. Well, definitely a drought in Miami. It hasn't rained like all of April. And as the old saying goes, April showers bring May flowers. And we did not have April showers. Like, it maybe rained one time in April, which is highly unusual. So we're in a bit of a drought. And Madison saw this video on TikTok and saying that the Everglades were in a drought right now. And one of the comments was like, oh, that means we're going to have a really bad hurricane season. And I can't stand this because I've literally never heard anyone say that we're going to have a good hurricane season every single fucking year. The people who are the people who tell us the severity of the hurricane season always say that this year is going to be a really bad year. Like, It's with everything, too. It's like, oh no, like the leaves are falling off the tree. It's going to be a real bad hurricane season. Oh no, the hedgehog. Oh no, the groundhog did not see his shadow. It's going to be a real bad hurricane season this year. Like, we have hurricane season every single year. It's 6 months out of the year. I refuse to live in fear of hurricanes. I'm just going to be prepared. Be extra prepared. And I'm going to be extra prepared this year because FEMA is like a new phone who dis. So the federal government, in a recent turn under this administration, has decided that it does not want to help out much on relief for natural disasters. Just ask the people in Arkansas, West Virginia, Washington State, and North Carolina who have all been denied federal relief from natural disasters this year. So the people along the Gulf Coast need to be very prepared this year. So truly, to all my listeners out there who are in hurricane-affected areas, please over-prepare for this hurricane season. Just be ready. Because if shit pops off, we don't know if we're going to get any relief from the federal government for that, which has been the go-to for relief when natural disasters hit. It turns out in the club, we are not all fam. So be extra prepared this year. On to something a little more positive, Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter tour has kicked off. It looks amazing. I didn't expect anything less. The visuals, the dancing, Blue Ivy, Rumi, Tina. And if Beyoncé could not top what she has already done, I mean, she's the best performer alive. It is indisputable at this point. But now she has surprised everyone, including the Beehive, for which I am a card-carrying member. We were all surprised when she had a new set on night two. Like, a new set list. Like, she sang different songs than she sang the first night that she performed. Now, Beyoncé's sets are intricate. They include many dancers and singers, even robots, moving stage sets, disappearing floors. So having multiple set lists is something that has not been done before in the stage performance realm of this magnitude. It reminded me a lot of how jam bands like the Grateful Dead, Widespread Panic, Phish, how they all tour and have different set lists for every show. So every show is different, which entices fans to buy tickets to multiple shows because each show will be a different experience. And Lord knows that Beyonce has the catalog for different set lists. I'm so excited. I was so excited when Cowboy Carter came out last year. I even jumped on the trending train and created a video to Texas Hold'em. You know, I did notice that Beyonce incorporated some of my moves that I put in my video into her choreography for Texas Hold'em, which is like totally fine. I'm actually honored. And I'm kind of not bullshitting. I saw the dance and I was like, what the fuck? But yeah, I'm like sitting here thinking that Beyonce's looking at my damn Instagram. You never know. The Beehive is buzzing, honey, because we have 100% confirmation that Beyonce is aware of all the chatter going down in the Beehive. We know this because she is incorporating moves into the show from multiple videos that circulated around the Beehive on social media. It is a Cowboy Carter summer, and I am here for it. Okay, I want to talk about The Valley a little bit. So The Valley is a show on Bravo that is featuring all these people who used to be on Vanderpump Rules. Me and Madison have been watching Vanderpump Rules. There's like 11 seasons or something, and it is just such a good fucking show. So Madison has been watching it from the beginning. It is excellent TV, but it's really weird watching old Vanderpump while The Valley and Vanderpump Villa are both airing. I just want to say real quick that living with Madison has been going so well. We just hang out together, and then we also give each other space. We have very few disagreements. And I just love it so much. Like, we're just like coexisting in like the best fucking way. And we love our house. We love our house so much. Oh, I just wanted to let y'all know that. Well, okay, so this season of The Rich Room, I wanted to only recap shows after the whole season had already aired and the reunion. And I wanted to do that just because it felt like it was just like too much to be keeping up with and to be doing podcasts on single episodes. And then it just felt like it was too much. But sometimes there are shows that really warrant recaps throughout the season. And that show currently for me is The Valley. Okay, so The Valley features all of these couples, I would say, like in their 30s and 40s, and most of them are not doing great. Some of them are great. Some of them give you hope and inspiration. Others are a fucking warning sign. Okay, so let's start with the good ones. So Danny and Nia. Danny and Nia seem to be a very strong couple. I love Nia. She still hasn't moved to Santa Clarita, and I bet she doesn't. I bet she ends up getting a house where she wants a house because she seems, you know, like very, not meek isn't the right word because she's strong. I mean, she like does like self-defense and all this shit. But she seems like very, a little bit soft-spoken. And so I think that can be confused for also being like meek, but that is not Nia. Because Danny, when he'll start pushing back on her and she'll be like, watch it. And I'm like, whoo, that quiet power that she has, I'm almost like envious of it. It's pretty cool to see. I like it. I like Nia a lot. And I like Danny. He seems to be a good guy. It seems that he treats Nia well, and he also appears to be a good father. But we see on this season that Danny is apparently having trouble when he drinks. Apparently, he rarely drinks, but when he does, he goes quote-unquote hard. And there was an incident when he was talking to the lesbian couple Jasmine and Melissa while apparently being quite wasted, and he said to Jasmine, he was like, how about you go get daddy a beer? And then when Jasmine goes to get a drink, he then grabs Melissa's ass. Like, What the fuck, Danny? That is sexual assault, my guy. Like, you have twin daughters. He obviously made a mistake, and I think we're going to see how that plays out. But it got me thinking, that is very concerning that one of the good guys on TV is behaving this way. Another strong couple is Jason and Janet. Love Jason, hate Janet. I think Janet is aware that most of the audience does not care for her. And although last season she was kind of like the head bitch in charge and used being pregnant to her full advantage, this year she ain't pregnant and she's being quite contrite. Janet had to apologize to Kristen after she said on a podcast that Kristen and Zach did not want to see her baby come to full term. And unbeknownst, I guess, to Janet at the time, Kristen had suffered her own miscarriage. And so Janet was out there saying that Kristen wasn't supportive of her pregnancy, and now she needs to apologize because Kristen never fucking said that. And it was actually just Zach who said, and he didn't fucking say, I didn't want your baby to come to full term, but he did say, I don't care if she gets upset, knowing that being an upset woman could go into early labor, could lose her baby. It wasn't great to say, and I do not condone that. But Kristen didn't say anything like that at all. And Janet just kind of hated Kristen and was on the crazy Kristen train. I don't care for Janet. Janet is thirsty. She seems like a fan. And she's also like fucking disgusting. When she said that she sucked her baby's snot out in like the little tube or something and it went into her mouth and she didn't care, I almost threw up. I almost threw up. It was so fucking disgusting. And I apologize to you all now for repeating it because it's gross. Janet, though, is a very lucky woman, and she must have done something good in a previous life because she has married Jason. And I low-key, high-key have a crush on Jason. He's smart. He's a lawyer. He's calm. He talks about emotional regulation. He's tall. He's fit. He brought Jax to fucking rehab. And he wears those knit-collared short-sleeve shirts that all the guys are wearing right now. And he treats Janet so fucking well. Ugh. And he's a fucking babe. He's tall. He has a full head of hair. And he has this whole salt and pepper thing going on right now. Jason on the Valley is single-handedly holding it down for all straight men out there. Jason needs to start doing one-on-one coaching with young men to teach them how to be men. I'm not fucking kidding. Let's move to Michelle and Jesse. So last season, they were married with a daughter. And as a surprise to no one, they are getting divorced this year. And I'm okay with it. They do not seem like they need to be together. But they also seem to not be co-parenting very well together. Jesse keeps changing the schedule, and I'm sure he is doing it to be petty and annoying to Michelle. I am so fucking grateful that I am not in that time period of my life anymore. Let's just take a moment to be grateful for that. Thank you, universe. So Jesse apparently has a girlfriend, but we still haven't seen her. I'm happy for Jesse because he says he's happy. Michelle has a boyfriend. His name is Nick, but I'm not a fan. I don't know why I don't care for him. I haven't figured it out yet. I feel like he's got bug eyes, and I don't mean to say that in a mean way because people can't help how they look, but it's just like really intense when he like looks at people. Maybe I'm projecting. Maybe I'm bug-eyed, and maybe I'm really intense when I look at people. I don't know. And I don't know why, but I don't like him. Funny enough, though, I actually like Jesse this season. I know that him and Michelle didn't work out, but he truly seems to be trying to better himself. To all the men out there, effort is very attractive. Putting in effort and time and planning and care and consideration is very attractive. And Jesse, I don't find him attractive, but I think it is attractive that he is actually putting in some semblance of work. I mean, He used the words emotional regulation in the first episode, which I think is already some major progress. Now, his fashion sense is a little off, but at least he's trying and he's taking risks. I mean, I feel like men's fashion is very boring. And straight men tend to not take any daring risks in their fashion choices. So I appreciate Jesse and his fashion risks. I don't like him making up a rumor that the mother of his child is resorting to sex work. Apparently, Jesse said in the guys' group chat that Michelle is sleeping with a billionaire for $1,500 a night. That is so fucked up. Like, your daughter is going to see this one day. Jesse admitted that he was making it up to try and sniff out the mole in the guys' group chat. I'm gonna let you fellas know one thing. All your wives, all your girlfriends, they all know how to get in your phone. So anything you're putting in there, they know how to get it. They're gonna get it. They're gonna see it. So if you want to be doing anything bad, if you want to be saying anything bad, go ahead and break up with them because they're gonna find out. Okay, that's just my little hot tip. You know we're in an alternate universe when Kristen and Luke are like the most stable couple. Kristen Doty deserves some credit. After me watching Vanderpump Rules with Madison and seeing where Kristen is now, she's had some major character development. And I'm very happy for her because I know that this season we will see her get pregnant and not we're not going to see her get pregnant, but we will find out that she is pregnant and that she also gets engaged. So I am so fucking happy for her. Like so happy for her. She's in her 40s and she was worried about fertility, but she is pregnant or got pregnant. And I just could not be happy for her. We do see Kristen go to fertility acupuncture, which worked for Nia. I'm going to go ahead and take this opportunity to say that we haven't studied women's fertility enough. Like, for the first time ever, women in their 40s are having more babies than women who are teenagers. We even have the term geriatric pregnancy for women who get pregnant at 35 years old or older. Clearly, women can get pregnant past 40, which I feel was something that most women believed wasn't an option for them. But I'm seeing it more and more, women getting pregnant in their 40s, and I'm fucking here for it. I feel like women previously felt that their last chance at childbearing years was before the age of 40, but that's not the case anymore. So if there are women out there who want children, but you've been told you are not fertile, but your body is biologically fine, then please go get a second opinion. Take Nia on the Valley as a great example. Her doctor found that her uterus and ovaries were completely normal and fine, but she wasn't getting pregnant. So she was diagnosed with unexplained infertility. Then she did fertility acupuncture and got pregnant with her first son, and then had twin girls. And I think she's pregnant with her fourth child right now. I don't know if they've announced that, but just I think I saw a picture of her pregnant. I truly think women have more time to have children than originally believed. And if you're going to wait to have children, and you should wait to have children until you find the right partner and until you're in a financially ready position, that's looking like it ain't going to be until 40 years old anyways. So it's fine. Oh, Lord. Now that brings us to Brittany and Jax. Jax has fucked up. He has hit rock bottom. Or almost. He's being verbally abusive to his wife. He has a cocaine addiction that he's admitted to. He threw furniture hitting Brittany. I guess the furniture hit Brittany. And so Brittany moved out, won't let Jax see their son alone. I think Jax has a long way to go, but I am glad that he is getting help. People are saying on social media that Jax would not have revealed his cocaine addiction had Brittany not said it on the most recent episode of The Valley. That may be true. I don't know. I mean, I guess you could question his motives on why he's doing it, but I think it is important to note that he is doing it. He has gone to rehab. I think he actually went twice. Listen, I'm not involved in it, so I have no fucking idea, but I guess actions are all that we should be judging him on right now. Really, that's all you should judge anyone on is their actions. It's kind of sad because you can tell that his son Cruz is not comfortable with him. Like when Jax came into the house, he ran away from Jax. Like he was afraid. He looked afraid. You could tell. And contrast that to when Brittany's friend Zach came over and Cruz was very receptive and seemed totally relaxed, even giving Zach like Eskimo kisses. Like, is that not right to say anymore? Fuck, it might not be. But you know, when you do the little nose kisses, oh, I'm sorry if I offended anybody. So Jax telling Brittany, you destroyed my life. You don't pay any bills. You should have checked on me. You should have left me years ago. You could have left. Like, I cannot. He is fucking, like, insane. And Brittany, poor thing, she was just trying to work on her damn relationship. If I'm being dead honest, the signs were all there back in the Vanderpump days. But as I have recently told my daughter, and I tell her very frequently, it is very easy to fall in love with the wrong person. Like, very easy. Look at all of these people falling in love. Like, and the people aren't right for them. It's super fucking easy to fall in love with the wrong person. So you got to be careful on who you fall in love with. That is my hot tip today. I do have to talk about one other show that hasn't concluded yet, and that show is Summer House. I would like to talk about Jesse Solomon from Summer House. I briefly mentioned Jesse a few episodes back, but more has happened on the show that needs to be discussed. Jesse is in his second season of Summer House. He was likable on his first season, but his storyline was mainly about his journey with testicular cancer. He is cancer-free, I believe. I think more than 5 years. Mazel tov to Jesse. Oh, he's also Jewish, and he loves to sing. My personal opinion, without knowing much about him, is that he's thirsty and a bit delusional. He definitely wants and likes a lot of attention. That was evident to me last year whenever he made up a song called What Would Jesse Solomon Do? And sang it at a restaurant in front of other people. Why? I mean, he does like attention. And listen, there's not really anything wrong with that. He's also delusional, meaning he believes his own lies and really lacks self-awareness. This season, there is a new cute 26-year-old girl in the house named Lexi. Jesse is 31. Jesse and Lexi hit it off from the very first weekend and basically accelerated from like to love in about 0.7 seconds. To me, it felt like Jesse saw the attention that West got last year when he was seeing Sierra, who was another girl in the house, and Jesse saw an opportunity this season to go for a girl in the house. And he wanted some of that attention for himself. Cut to Jesse hosting a Shabbat dinner, doing runs like he's Beyonce on Cowboy Carter tour at Shabbat dinner. Like he's like, Shema Israel. So Jesse and Lexi are all hot and heavy, hanging out in the city, going out on dates. Jesse starts saying that he loves her. Lexi makes it clear that she doesn't sleep with men unless she is exclusively dating them. So Jesse makes it his mission to exclusively date her, in my opinion, so he can sleep with her. What could go wrong? Well, there's one weekend where Lexi has to work, and she doesn't go to the Hamptons to the share house with everyone. One of the other housemates, Emeril, who is a sex maniac and has threesomes and orgies like every single freaking weekend, has ladies over, and they are getting busy in the bedroom. And Jesse Solomon, he's like, oh, I'm going to go see what's going on with Emeril and his friends in the bedroom. We all know what's going on in there, Jesse Solomon. They are all having sex. So Jesse goes into the room, stays in there for like 30 minutes. And then one of the women sucks his toe. I bet y'all thought I was going to say something else. Ew, gross. But he wouldn't have done that if Lexi was there. He probably also wouldn't have been flirting and dancing with Sierra. Another girl in the house telling her that he would have hit on her if he would have gotten to the house first last year, saying that her leg turns him on. Okay, so this is like the worst thing that he did, in my opinion. Okay, toe sucking aside, it was worse to me that he was laying on that big floaty in the pool with Sierra and she had her leg propped up on his leg, like non-sexual. And he was like, your leg is turning me on right now. And she was like, what? And moved it. And then old Jesse Solomon acted like he was falling on the raft and like that he lost his balance and he fell right on top of Sierra. Like, come on. Come the fuck on, bro. Mind you, he's telling Lexi he loves her and wants to be with her and wants to be exclusive with her. In addition to the toe sucking and the fake falling on top of Sierra, Jesse also decided to loop in his female housemates to discuss his relationship with Lexi and his problems with Lexi. He tells them that he's seeing all these yellow flags with her, like her saying that he's following all these other girls on Instagram and that she wants to meet his parents, but he didn't want to. He was also not happy that Lexi brought up the comments Jesse made on Instagram. So Jesse comments on his female friend's pictures saying something like, oh my God, you're the hottest thing in the world. Well, Lexi was like, of course, gas them up, but maybe you say something like, you look really nice today, instead of like, oh, you're so fucking hot. But the way that Jesse delivered the information was like, yeah, she doesn't want me following girls or commenting on my friends' photos. That's a gross mischaracterization, Jesse. And the girls at the summer house are friends with Lexi, and they give her the heads up about what old Jesse Solomon is saying. And they also tell her that Jesse has been inappropriately flirting when Lexi is out of town. Oh, and they tell her about the toe sucking, which conveniently was omitted by Jesse. He was like, it wasn't a big deal. It was just a joke. Listen, it was such a non-issue that I just didn't tell you. It was a joke. I'm sure Lexi loves jokes, Jesse. We all love to laugh, Jesse. What would Jesse Solomon do? Get his toe sucked and keep it from you. Well, shit hit the fucking fan. And Lexi tells Jesse that the girls informed her of everything. Jesse confronts his friends and was like, tell me specifically what I did that was inappropriate. And Lindsay, who I have a newfound love for, not just because we have the same name, but Lindsay says, well, you told Sierra that things might have been different if you got to her before Wes did last summer. And Jesse says, I was doing that to make Sierra feel better. I'm sorry, sir. To make Sierra feel better? Like, yeah, right. So Sierra pops off and is angry with Jesse. Lexi is angry with Jesse. And Jesse doesn't do anything. He looks like a scared little puppy who has no idea what to do because all of the chaos that he has created has finally come to a head. What bothers me so much is that Jesse truly seems like he has no idea what he did wrong. It's as if he has no appreciation for the effects of his actions. He kept saying, I've been doing the best I can, and I've been really trying to put my best foot forward. But I think what Jesse meant to say is that he is putting his best toe forward and he got it sucked. You can't claim to be acting on your best behavior and then voluntarily walk into an orgy. The only person that Jesse is lying to at this point is himself. Everyone can see what's going on except for him. Like, people really hold on to the narrative they've created in their head. Like, Jesse has decided that he's a good guy and that he has done his best, so he cannot comprehend the feedback he's getting from all the women in the house. And they're all saying the same thing. So the next morning, Jesse and Lexi hash it out in the kitchen, and Lexi is like, you know, I think we should bring in everyone and sort this out. I'm supportive of this. The biggest issue here is that Jesse was having issues with Lexi early on. And instead of telling Lexi what those issues were, he went and told the rest of the people who are in the share house. In doing so, Jesse triangulated his housemates into his relationship with Lexi. So it only makes sense that everyone involved come to the table and get on the same page. So the girls try to help deliver the message to Jesse in a digestible manner. And he's like, I'm just not going to keep fighting. Just because people disagree with you does not mean that it's a fight or an argument. No one raised their voice. No one had an aggressive tone. But sweet baby Jesse Solomon did not get the message. He went on to rant to West that Lexi is making him look like a bad person and like he's two-faced. No, my guy, you are doing that. Your actions are making you look two-faced. If I hear Jesse say at the reunion that he did not know how to navigate this situation the same way that West said last year, I will scream. I'm glad that Jesse apologized to Lexi, but in this world, actions are all that matter. I think women have spent so much time and energy giving weight to the words of men who say they will do better, who say they are sorry, who say they will change. But the problem is that talk is cheap. Words are empty and mean nothing without action. We need to just let people do what they want, and they will show you what they'd rather do. Like, Jesse told Lexi that he loved her, that he wanted to be exclusive with her. But his actions said something completely different. Because the first chance that Jesse got, he showed Lexi that he would rather be doing something else. He'd rather be getting his toe sucked. He'd rather be pretending to fall on Sierra so he could lay on top of her. And then lie about it. Before I get off Summer House and the Valley, let me say some positive things. Okay, for the Valley, it has been very encouraging to seeing the men give emotional support to each other. I'm very impressed with this. It is promising. It's showing progress in the right direction. Also, the boys on Summer House, after the party, them all laying on the trampoline outside and watching Zootopia on a laptop together. I mean, they were literally like cuddling. And it was really beautiful to see. I like that. I think we need more of that energy. So now I want to talk a little bit about sad men. We have gone from mad men to sad men. I mentioned in previous episodes that young straight men are sad right now. I did not come to this conclusion on my own. I follow this guy on social media. His name is Scott Galloway. His Instagram handle is Prof Galloway. So P-R-O-F, like professor, Prof Galloway. I like Scott Galloway. He's either a current or former NYU professor, serial entrepreneur. He hosts a podcast and he has several books. I like Scott Galloway because he is a middle-of-the-road guy on political issues and current events. He doesn't seem to be affiliated with any political party and basically calls it as he sees it. I think we need more people out there like that. And I myself am trying to be a person like that. Now, that being said, I don't agree with all of his ideas and beliefs, but we do agree on some points. Now, as far as sad men, Galloway's Instagram is where I first heard that young straight men are in what is being called a loneliness epidemic or a masculinity crisis. According to Galloway, men are 4 times more likely to die by suicide than women are. 1 in 3 men under the age of 30 have never had a girlfriend. Galloway says that young straight men have fallen behind in school, in work, and in love. That boys from fatherless homes are 300% more likely to carry weapons or drugs. And that more boys now are raised without fathers present in their lives. So Galloway says that we don't need less masculinity, but that our young men need to be better at masculinity, which is rooted in responsibility, character, and strength. So, what does it mean to be a man or be masculine? According to Galloway, it means providing, protecting, procreating, and showing up. I agree with all of these. And I think there are some additional tenets of masculinity that we should incorporate, such as expressing emotions without shame, setting boundaries and respecting other people's boundaries, leading with integrity and not dominance, to be nurturing and collaborative. This one's a big one. To reject violence and control as markers of power, and to seek help and build deep, non-performative relationships. So young women do not seem to be having the same problem as young men. So why is that? Well, I asked ChatGPT this question. I love ChatGPT. We are best friends. ChatGPT never fails me. She is always there for me. So I asked ChatGPT, why is there a male loneliness crisis but not a female loneliness crisis? And here's what I got. I got 6 reasons. So the first reason is that men and women are both lonely, but experience it differently. According to a 2021 Harvard report, 1 in 3 Americans report serious loneliness. So that would be about 30% of the population, and that is significant. But men tend to report fewer close friendships and are less likely to reach out for support, which can make their loneliness more chronic and invisible. Women, on the other hand, are more likely to maintain emotionally supportive social circles even in adulthood. So the second reason, according to ChatGPT, is that men are socialized to suppress emotion. This is fucking true. From a young age, boys are taught not to cry, not to ask for help, and not to appear vulnerable. So when adult men are feeling lonely, they're more likely to isolate rather than seek connection, turning what could be a momentary experience into a chronic condition. The third reason given by ChatGPT is that women do face loneliness too, but it is framed differently. So when women express loneliness, it's often characterized as depression or burnout. Or it can be dismissed as like she just needs a man or she's just emotional. Women's loneliness isn't trending in the headlines, but it definitely exists. It just gets categorized under different labels like overwhelmed, caretaker fatigue, or postpartum isolation. Men are way less likely to even identify that they are lonely. So the fourth reason talks about how we frame the crisis. So basically, women and men are both experiencing a loneliness crisis, but we're framing men's loneliness different than we're framing women's. Essentially, crisis framing reflects whose pain gets centered. So male loneliness is framed as a crisis because it threatens social stability. Mass shooters, incels, and angry online influencers often come from the isolated male populations. Meanwhile, issues like violence against women, abuse, and maternal mortality kill women every single day, but are rarely labeled as epidemics. The fifth reason deals with friendships. So men's friendships often decline with age. Men frequently rely on their romantic partners to meet their emotional needs. And when they lose that relationship in a breakup or a divorce or death, they're more likely to end up isolated. Women, on the other hand, are more likely to maintain female friendships across life stages. The sixth reason deals with Andrew Tate and emotional orphans. Influencers like Andrew Tate offer community, identity, and purpose to young men who feel lonely, but that rhetoric is based on dominance, not connection. So boys raised without emotional modeling are often left emotionally orphaned, craving validation, but unsure how to form safe, mutual relationships. Scott Galloway says that there is this gag reflex and like visceral reaction among women and progressives when the issue of male loneliness gets brought up. Because no one was talking about this issue for a while. And then there were people on social media like Andrew Tate. Does everyone know who Andrew Tate is? Andrew Tate is a self-proclaimed misogynist and advocates for male supremacy and celebrates violence against women. His rhetoric has gotten him banned from all social media platforms. Well, except Twitter, but that's not really surprising considering who owns Twitter. If you've seen Adolescence on Netflix, that is the product of Andrew Tate rhetoric. Andrew Tate and his brother Tristan Tate, along with four other men, are currently under investigations by Romanian authorities for forming an organized criminal group, human trafficking, trafficking of minors, sexual intercourse with a minor, and money laundering. So, this very dangerous guy who clearly hates women is perpetuating this very dangerous rhetoric on social media targeting young straight men. And the effect of that is not great. Authorities in Northern Ireland have launched legal action against Andrew Tate and his brother over social media posts threatening members of parliament. So Andrew Tate proudly proclaims that he has control over the youth. And parents have begun to step in and say, hold up, we have a problem here. Galloway mentioned in an interview that moms are stepping up after realizing that their girls are behaving differently than their boys. Like, one mom said that she has three kids, two girls and a boy. One girl is at Penn State, one girl is working PR in Chicago, and the boy lives in the basement playing video games and vaping. Basically saying that young men are far more susceptible to following into an Andrew Tate algorithm or something like it. We are seeing everyday examples of men tearing each other down. It's so crazy because all of my life, I have heard how it is women who compete with each other and it is women who tear each other down. But that has not been my experience in life at all. But I have seen men tear each other down. Look at that NFL draft prank call. Deion Sanders' son, Shedeur Sanders, is a football player and was up for the NFL draft this year. If I mispronounced his name, I apologize. I don't keep up with football, like, at all. I mean, I used to, but I don't anymore. Well, some kid who happens to be the son of an Atlanta Falcons coach called Sanders and told him that he was being selected by the New Orleans Saints in the NFL draft. But it was all a prank. I guess the point of this prank was to in some way implicate the New Orleans Saints. That's the only conclusion I can come up with. But the kid who made the call really blew it by recording the call and putting it on social media. So the Atlanta Falcons and the New Orleans Saints have had a long-standing rivalry. And I haven't seen a fuck-up this bad by Atlanta since they blew their lead in Super Bowl 51. For those who have forgotten, in Super Bowl 51, the Atlanta Falcons played the New England Patriots. At halftime, Atlanta was up 28-3 in what was to surely be a win for Atlanta. But Tom Brady and the Patriots were like, up, 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 and came back from being more than 3 touchdowns behind to win the game in overtime, defeating the Atlanta Falcons. It was the largest comeback in Super Bowl history and the first game to be decided in overtime. So the Atlanta Falcons are really used to dropping the ball. And this draft story is no exception. It was really cruel, though, because these young men are sitting by the phone waiting for a call that could change their entire lives, and a kid does a prank call? How cruel. How mean-spirited. I wonder where he learned this behavior. I don't find the joke funny at all. And the NFL felt the same way, because they fined the Falcons $250,000 and the coach whose son did the prank call $100,000. You never know what people are dealing with. Something like this cruel phone call could send someone into a downward spiral, which could have the gravest consequences. And this is just another example of young men tearing each other down. Fuck, look at politics. That's really tearing each other down. But look at women. We lift each other up. We're here for each other. We check on each other regularly. I mean, there are mean girls out there, but I think that's dying out. I think a lot of women don't care if they fit in anymore. The world is too big to not go out there and find your people. I had a thought the other day that it seems like the misogyny is really coming from younger men, but not from men in the older generations. I'll take my dad, for example. A bit of a character, and he has his issues like the rest of us, but he doesn't see women as inferior. In fact, he got in an argument with someone, with one of his friends, because he disagreed with what the friend said, and the friend was so upset that he left my dad's house. So what my dad's friend said was something along the lines of, women can't be firefighters. And my dad was like, actually, yes, they can, and actually, yes, they are. And the friend kept arguing with them about why women can't be firefighters and was so upset that my dad did not agree with him, so much so that he left. So yeah, it doesn't seem to be the seasoned men who have issues with women. It appears to be the younger men, and it's like, how did we get here? Whose fault is this, and how are we going to fix it? It's going to take some time, but I really think that we can. So summing it all up, if I could sum it up, what I think is happening to young straight men is that they want to be in relationships with women, but they are underperforming in all areas of life, and women only want to date men who meet their standards. So if I'm understanding this correctly, the fundamental issue is that young straight men are finding that women do not find them dateable. And it honestly, it makes some sense. I would say that late Gen Xers and younger generations are really the first generations of women to have the widespread ability to earn money and to support themselves and to not have to marry young. Women now have the choice to choose who they want to be with, and women are finding out that there are not a lot of viable options in partners out there. The effect of these slim pickings is that women are choosing to be alone. Scott Galloway says that women need to have empathy for men in this loneliness crisis. I do have empathy for this predicament. My question is, what can we do though? Like, as women, what can we do? I know some fantastic moms out there who are raising boys, and I have full confidence that we can cure this male loneliness issue in one generation. I'm empathetic, but I also don't know how to help. And if I'm being completely honest, I don't think men want the help from women. For decades, women have made men our projects. We have seen something in men that they did not see in themselves. And we have pushed them and lifted them up and helped them become better versions of themselves. And they still treat us like shit. I know not all men, but it's lots of men. Too many men. So women are fucking fed up. And we took all of that energy, all that effort, all that support that we were giving, and we turned it on ourselves. We decided we are going to make ourselves the project. I saw a quote the other day that said that women should be as picky as they want because marrying later in life never killed a woman, but marrying the wrong man did. Choosing who we get into a relationship with, who we share our life with, is very important. And I know that the men want the empathy from women, but where has the empathy been from men on the violence towards women by men? Because I haven't been seeing that. And it's like, we're supposed to step in and try and be part of the solution, but we have a long-standing violence crisis by men against women. A woman, I got the statistics from Emory School of Medicine in Atlanta. Don't let them hear this episode of the podcast because I talk shit about the Atlanta Falcons, but they're a very good school. And according to Emory University, they have domestic violence facts. And 85% of intimate partner violence victims are women. And a woman is beaten every 9 seconds. Every year, nearly 5.3 million incidents of violence to women occurs at age 18 and older. More than 3 women are killed by their husbands or boyfriends every day. 1 in 3 women worldwide has been forced into sex, beaten, or otherwise abused in another way during her lifetime. And quite frankly, this type of violence is severely underreported. But despite that underreporting, calls by women related to domestic violence make up about half of all violent crimes to police departments. So we know where we need to do our work. So before we start talking about a national program related to male loneliness, we need to talk about how men are treating women. And so we need everybody to kind of come together on this issue. My point is, we can't talk about the male loneliness crisis without simultaneously discussing the issue of violence against women by men. Okay, I don't think we have time for politics today, even though I was going to talk about some shit that annoyed me, but I will gladly pass it off to next week because I will still be annoyed next week. But who knows, maybe something even crazier will have come up and I won't even have to talk about it. I fucking hope not. Thank you for listening to episode 5 of The Rich Room. Please follow me on social media at The Rich Room Podcast. You can follow my personal account at Love with Lindsay. Also, send me DMs if you want to talk some shit, if you want to talk about something, debate something. I'm open for it. I'm here for it. I like the chatter. I hope everyone has a fucking fantastic weekend, and I will see you next week. Toodaloo!